Welcome to the podcast of Trailblazers Incorporated, where we share the stories of trailblazing tradeswomen in hopes to inspire others to join the trades.
Hi, Doreen. Today we are going to start our podcast with Doreen Cannon from Cleveland. She is a member plumber out of local 55 in Cleveland, Ohio, and she has done a great amount of things. I know you're the president of your local.
So hi, Jill. Thanks a lot for having me on. So back in 1993, I had been working retail for years. I was in retail management, working a lot of hours on salary, a lot of overtime, you know, and not getting paid for it, strictly salary. And then I got pregnant. So I was lucky enough to stay home for 5 years to raise our son. So when it was time for me to go back to work, I thought, you know, I am not going back to that, to working all those hours and just, you know, it's just a madhouse, especially you can imagine retail Christmas time, how stressful it is. So I always enjoyed working with my hands. I used to putz around the yard with my father. He was very handy. He was a pipe fitter by trade, but he was a maintenance pipe fitter in the aerospace union. But he was also very handy. He did a lot of like stone work in our yard. I used to help him build stone patios and walls, and he did a lot of plumbing around the house too. So I always like to putz around. I'm the youngest of three girls, and I think maybe I'm the son that he never had. So I saw a little article in a Cleveland paper about a career fair trying to promote women to get into the trades. So I went to the career fair, I walked around, visited all the different trades, and I was really impressed with the plumbers. I liked their program. I liked the kind of training that they got from their international level. And so I applied, and I got in about a year and a half after I applied, right about the same time that my son started all day kindergarten. So I got in the program, served a 5-year apprenticeship, and the rest is history, so they say.
Wow, that's amazing. We have a lot in common. I was a waitress for many years, and I'm the youngest of three as well. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's fantastic. So where did you go from there? Because I know you're an instructor currently. How did you get from there to here?
So again, I served my 5-year apprenticeship with the same company, Northern Ohio Plumbing. I stayed with them after my apprenticeship. So I was in the field for about 12 years. Then they had a opportunity for a full-time evening instructor here at the training center. So I applied, and luckily I got the job. So when I first started, I worked like 11 to 9 at night, 4 days a week type thing. And I taught the residential trainees, our light commercial trainees, some journeyman education classes, and service trainees. And then a couple years ago, the daytime instructor decided to retire. So now I am the full-time instructor during the day. And we have about 100 commercial apprentices within different degrees of their 5-year apprenticeship program. So that's who I teach now.
That's really incredible. And now COVID has changed a lot of things. It's created a lot of challenges for the schools, for the instructors, and for the students. Do you want to, indulge a little bit of that kind of those kinds of details that you've had to maneuver?
Yes. So our trustees decided to not come back in person. So we have not been in, I have not seen my apprentices face to face since March is when we went out. So it's very challenging. You know, over the summer, we did a lot of research about what is the best programming to use to try to do remote learning. We do a lot of things online as far as assignments. So it's very challenging, especially for the kind of careers that we have, where it's so much hands-on. On a normal school day, where they're here for an 8-hour day, we only spend 4 hours in the classroom, and then we spend 4 hours in the shop out of the 8-hour day. So it's a lot of hands-on. And this is training that they don't necessarily get in the field, because there's kind of that little, you know, catch-22 where they're learning in the field, but sometimes they don't get a good variety. They get stuck on the same kind of job, or they get stuck on a really big job that they do the same thing over and over. So we kind of supplement their in the field training here at the training center. So that's really missed. And there's really no way that you can do that remotely. So it's been very challenging. I've realized that math is very hard to teach remotely. that it's there, it takes a longer time for them to catch up, and they're not as focused. You know, a lot of them, one of my apprentices has four daughters at home online the same time he's trying to be online, all trying to learn remotely. So his, even though he tries to like hide in a room, his house is just, you know, in chaos. So there's just a lot of challenges. So, you know, we're doing the best we can. The approach that we have taken is to do the things that we would have been doing that 4 hours in the class, up front loading that. So then hopefully if we do get to come back, they'll basically be in the shop for 8 hours. So we're trying to kind of adjust it that way, but it definitely is challenging.
Wow. I can see that. I can see that. Well, we're all doing the best we can, right? And kudos to you for doing what you can to still see them through their apprenticeship and just not putting it on hold, like I've heard some areas of the country are doing, unfortunately. So let's kind of shift to your trade of choice. If there was one thing, one favorite thing about the trade, what would it be?
The variety. I think the variety of what you get to do. I mean, luckily towards the, you know, when I was in the field, there were times when I was put on a job and got to stay there from the very beginning underground all the way to the finish of the job. And that's really nice because you get a lot of variety of things to do and you get to really see the whole picture of what a building looks like and how it all comes together until the time that it gets opened up. So that's, I really like that about it. And I like the hands-on. I like the challenge of a lot of it. A lot of it is not just go ahead and do this. You have to think about it and how can this piece of this puzzle come together? How can these pipes get in the wall? So it's also very challenging.
Yeah, no, that sounds incredible. I'm a welder, but maybe I'll get my plumbing ticket. That sounds pretty darn
right,
exciting. It sounds like it's never boring, right? It's never boring.
Right. Never
and
boring.
You're always learning. Yeah, always learning. That's great. Now, another question I have for you are, what obstacles have you overcome along the way?
So for me, when I got in, and again, we talk to a lot of tradeswomen across the country, and some of us just kind of fall into a nice circumstances, and others just get kind of thrown into a big circumstance. And again, I think it depends on what kind of job you get put on. If you're put on, like if there's a stadium going on or something huge in a city and you get put on that, you get kind of lost in the shuffle. Well, when I first started, I got on a smaller job and I was teamed up with two really great journeymen. And I was lucky enough to really kind of, wherever they went, I went for almost my first 2 years of my apprenticeship. So I was really lucky. They really looked out for me, but there were challenges. There's guys that don't want you on the job, don't think you should be there. But if you've got somebody there with you, and they always stuck up for me, you know, they tell somebody to, you know, get out of here, don't say something to her. So that was really challenging. Teaching a little bit challenging too, being a female. When I first started teaching here, and what made me get to the level of becoming a full-time instructor is I created a sexual harassment class for the local, which they did not have. We did not have one in our training center. So I kind of, and there was really, back when I did it in 2004, there was really no construction sexual harassment class. There was a lot of office type situations where you could get videos and things like that, but nothing for construction. So I kind of had to invent the whole thing. And that was, you know, the old, oh, great, now here's the woman teaching us sexual harassment, you know, kind of, but so that was a little bit challenging, but that's really what got me going in the teaching and the instructor realm of it. But jobs, again, probably the biggest challenge, and when you feel the most isolated is you go on a job and you're the only female, not just the only female plumber, but you know, if you're on a big job with 100 tradesmen, you're the only woman. And that can be, you know, isolating and a little bit intimidating. You know, it's always nice to see a friendly face, to see another female, and then it's like, you know, yes, I got a partner here, you know. So that's challenging.
No, that you know, I feel you there. As far as the course goes, that's fantastic. Maybe that's something you should patent and share with the rest of us, because I think everybody should be taking training like that.
Yeah.
I'm in Canada, you're in the US. I think the training would be the same.
It would absolutely be the same.
Construction site is a construction site. Yes. Yes, no, that's great. And that was kind of something else I was gonna ask you about. Other women in the trade when you started out. Were there a lot of women, and are there a lot more now, do you feel?
So I started my apprenticeship in 1998. There was not they took on a big class that year. So I think there was four female out of 60 apprentices they took that year. By the time we were through into the first year, two of them were already gone. They had dropped out. So I think two of us ended up completing it. The numbers are still so low, and it's so challenging because, you know, you're working with a smaller group that would even want to do this. Let's face it, a lot of men don't want to do this. So when we talk about construction and the physical aspect of it and the weather aspect of it, you're already, there's a big majority of the population that want nothing to do with that. So now then you're trying to find women who want to do this. So you're working with, again, a smaller group that want to do it. So it's really challenging to try to find the women who want to be, you know, are interested and you can promote them in. We do a lot of outreach here, trying to promote to get women in. And I think we definitely made a difference here, but we're still stuck around that 3%, you know, of women that are in the trades. Even all the trades in Cleveland, each individual trade does not have that many. And then it's hard to form, like, I think we have 25 females in my local out of a membership of 1,100. So it's not very big, and it's really hard to get those 25 women to get together and create some kind of committee to promote the plumbing industry. Because like anything else, you get a group of people, a small percent of them even want to get involved in anything. So again, you're working with a smaller number. So what we did in Cleveland here is that we, myself and a carpenter, female carpenter, approached the Cleveland Building Trades. We were lucky enough that when we decided to do this, they had just gotten a new executive secretary of the Cleveland Building Trades. He was young. He was a bricklayer by trade. He was coming out of the field. The other guy that was in there forever. And we couldn't even get an appointment with him to talk about anything. But the new Dave Wondolowski, we went to him and we approached him and said, hey, we would really like to form a Cleveland Building Trades committee for women under the umbrella of the Cleveland Building Trades. So he said, yeah, we write up a proposal, write up a mission statement, and we went ahead and do it, and they approved it through their executive board. So now we have the Cleveland Tradeswomen Committee, where we bring together all the tradeswomen from across the Cleveland area. So now you're talking about hundreds of women. So now we, you know, and we really hit our stride right before COVID, like everybody else. We had done a fundraiser to collect toys for a female rehabilitation center. We had done some volunteer work on a foster house, and we really gone bowling, all the fun things too. And that, when we go back to that talking about walking on a job and being the only female, the committees like this help the women meet each other who don't get a chance to meet each other out in the field. So all of a sudden you were bowling with the tradeswomen and you walk on a job the next week and there's one of the women that you met at bowling. So it's kind of that, it helps that support and that, you know, almost a mentorship too between the women. So that, you know, that's part of it too, kind of getting the women together. So
that's really fantastic. Again, I think every area should have an organization like that, because it does make such a difference to have that support team. And I'm sure you're heavily involved in that organization, right?
Yes, I'm co-chair of the committee.
speaking of the things that you do, we have not touched much on you being president of your local.
Right. So I first got elected president, I think in 2011, 2012. So I just got elected to my fourth term. So there's two more years to this term. It's 3-year terms. I first got involved down at the union. Again, my mentor out in the field, Jim Foresta, when he first started working with me, he was a big attending the union meetings. So he said to me, you got to come to the union meetings. So I would go, he would save me a seat next to him. I would sit next to him. He'd introduce me to everybody. So that was kind of what made me start to get involved with the union. Then I decided that I would like to get more involved. So what can I do? What qualities do I have that I can bring to something? And, you know, it's going to sound funny, but I took my female qualities and I went on the entertainment committee. That was my first committee. And what do? They plan the children's Christmas party and the plumber's picnic. So I was on that for a couple of years. Then I took over as chair of that and I changed all kinds of stuff about the kids' Christmas party, because I used to take my son to the kids' Christmas party. So I knew, and we'd go and they would have nothing but candy. It was just candy and you got to see Santa and you got a present and you left. Well, I took over and I got rid of, everybody got one little bag of candy. I brought him pizza and popcorn and a magic show, and all the wives, oh my gosh, they all were coming. Oh my gosh, this is just so great, so great. And the wives are going to tell their husbands, right? The husbands are the ones that are the members who are going to vote. So that was kind of my stepping stone. And then I ran for executive board. That was my first elected position that I won. And then after I served a term on that, I decided to run for president and I got elected. Which
that
again,
is fantastic.
Yeah. And that it is running for office is another challenge, because I was the first female to ever get elected to an office here. But when I first got elected to the executive board, not to mention the first female president. So there was a lot of, when I first got nominated and ran for president, it was tough. There was a lot of, I had people come up to me and say, over my dead body, will a female ever be president of this local? You know what I mean? So, and a lot of people mm-hmm. that just didn't want it. But I think showing that I made changes, I was really involved. I would go to everything, the parades, the picnics, the parties, the fundraisers, everything. And I think that's really when women ask me how to go about it. Again, find that one place where you can make a difference and get people to know you, you know, recognize your name, recognize your face. Hey, oh, you're the one that did the Christmas party, you know, and I think that's what helps to kind of get your foot in the door.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good on you. Fantastic. it really sounds like you were welcomed by your brothers, maybe not all of them in the beginning, but you're welcomed by your brothers. And I think that's another thing that stands in the way with women wanting to join the trades. They're afraid that they're not going to be accepted, but they need to maybe, you know, put that feeling aside, because really we are accepted as sisters. We really are. And that just
absolutely.
Goes to show.
Yeah, I agree. That. And I think it goes back to, you know, how are you going to, I always tell the apprentices, you're going to make an impression, your impression that everybody's going to have for you about you forever within the first week, if not the first few days that you start this journey as an apprentice. So I think that goes true for females too. Are you, let's go on the job and let's do what we have to do. Let's get right in there. Don't be afraid to do it, because women have a tendency to stand back too. I always like, there was a study that was done that said that when someone posts for a job, it's got maybe 10 qualifications that a woman will read that and read. And if she does not have every one, if not at least 9 of those qualifications, she doesn't even apply. Or a man will read it, and if he's got 5 of those, he applies for it. So women are a little bit more less, you know, I think they feel more pressure on them to, if they are taking a job, to be perfect at it. And, you know, that's apprenticeships are what that's about. We'll get you in and we're going to teach you. So I think that makes a big difference as far as anyone, whether male or female, having a sustaining career in the trades. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, I know. I of course I agree completely. And I feel that women are really hard on themselves while they're in the trade as well. We strive to prove ourselves time and time again, which sometimes is necessary, right? A lot of people doubt us when we get on these job sites, but we strive for perfection as well.
Yes.
We do the job as best that we possibly can. Not to say that, you know, men don't as well, but it just seems to be an additional challenge that we put on ourselves, right? But yes, we can definitely do it, because look at, you've done amazing, amazing things. I'm honored to call you a friend of mine. Anyways, so next question I have for you is, let's first see what a day in the life of Doreen is. What's a day in the life?
I usually get my class in the morning, starts at 7:30. I usually get here about 6:30 to the training center, get everything organized, and then I'm off and running with the apprentices. And again, from the minute they walk, well, when we're in person or online, from the minute we start at 7:30 all the way till 4 o'clock, I'm talking or, you know, showing them something or doing something. So it's a nonstop 8-hour day, just like when you're in the field. I don't have classes every day. Luckily, I don't have classes on Friday. So Friday is my catch-up day, prepare for the next week, grade all the papers, you know, get my class outline ready, get everything I need for the following week, and then we're off and running again. And then on top of that is my duties. We have union meetings once a month. So I obviously, as president, chair the meeting. and I'm involved at other parts as president of the local. I'm also able to go to any kind of committee meetings as part of committees too. So, I mean, I can go to more stuff than I probably could fit in a day. So
it's a busy life you have, yes. Doreen. So the next question I have for you is advice for others. What advice do you have for anyone, women or underrepresented groups, anyone that is willing, that is interested in perhaps trying to join the trades or explore a career in the trades? What advice would you have for them?
The first thing I would say is to do your research. So hopefully a lot of places across the country hold great career fairs. I know in Cleveland here, that was part of what I did when we started the Tradeswomen Committee. We started hosting 2 career fairs a year where all the trades come together. It's very hard for the trades to recruit because you're all going kind of individually. You know, high school invites you, somebody else invites you, and you're not always speaking to people who are interested in it. That used to be my biggest challenge when I would go somewhere and try to talk about a career in the trades. Half the people there were not interested in that. But by hosting a career fair with just the building trades, everybody that walks in that door is there because they're interested in an apprenticeship, a career in the trades. And we've been doing real well. We've had about 450 people at the last one that we hold. This was before COVID. But the advice I would tell them is go do something like that and talk to each trade. Find out what they do. Each trade's a little bit different. What is their training like? Do you go at night? Do you go during the day? Do you get paid for training? What kind of physical aspect is it? Obviously, an iron worker compared to a plumber, I don't have to be up on a beam walking somewhere. So there's all different things. So find out what the physical restrictions or what you might have to do physically. That find out about their training, find out what the wages are. Don't be afraid to ask, hey, what are the wages? What are the starting wages as an apprentice? And then make a decision based on that. And then, you know, make sure you go and follow the steps, apply. I always tell people, they say, well, I'm not ready to get into this till a year from now. So, you know, apply now because it may take a little bit of a process to get through. So to follow those steps. And then once they do get on the job, once they do get accepted into the program, again, start out good, start out strong, start out by making a good impression, show up. Still, even now, our biggest challenge with apprentices starting are showing up to work on time and staying off their cell phones on a construction site, which is a safety issue. You know, so we face those challenges too. So that's what I tell them all. I said, you know what, this is an absolutely great career opportunity for you. You know, being in a union and working through a collective bargaining agreement, where else can you go and start a career and know that 5 years later you will be making this wage? You know, you work a regular job, you may be up for a yearly review, you go in and your boss tells you, well, we didn't have a very good year, we're not giving raises this year. You know, you go the next year, well, we didn't do very good this year, we're giving a 1% raise. But here, when you get an apprenticeship program, you can plan. My gosh, in 5 years, this is the kind of money I'm going to be making. These are the benefits I'm going to have. You know, healthcare, big for healthcare. We get a lot of young guys in, and before they're through their 5-year program, they're married and they have babies on the way. And what a relief that they're in this where they don't have to worry about those, obstacles to take care of your family. So those are the things I think are the most important. And for women, not too different than that, other than knowing that you are going to be under a microscope, whether that's fair or not. But you're absolutely right when you said that, you know, we go on a job and we have to prove ourselves all the time. And you finally get on a job and everybody knows you. They know you're a great worker. And then you get sent to another job with a whole new crew. And it's like, you know, back to square one again. Now you got to prove yourself all over again. But I think that's also true for apprentices starting out too, as people get to know them, that every time they go to a new job there and work with new guys, they have to prove themselves again.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, very, very true. Wow. Yeah, now the apprenticeship, of course, is different in the United States than it is in Canada. So it depends on where you are on right. How your apprenticeship is going to roll out. But yes, the programs really exploring, finding out what you like and then going for it really is a fantastic way of looking at things. Now I'm going to give you the floor, and if there's anything else you'd like to share on the podcast, anything that maybe I have not asked that you'd like to share with anyone, is there anything else you'd want to add?
The only thing to talk a little bit about how do we reach more women and how do we get that percentage up in the trades. And I think part of the challenge and what we all need to do is to reach younger girls. And that's challenging. You know, when you ask a little girl who's 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, what do you want to be when you grow up? You hear amazing things. I want to be president. I want to build a house. I want to be a pilot. I want to be all these things. It's like they don't see any kind of barriers. But then all of a sudden they get to junior high and you ask them and it's, you know, oh, I want to do a hairstylist, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it gets less broad of what they open up their mind to. So I think it's really important to find those, to let those young girls know that this is an opportunity. And part of that challenge is because there's so few women, there's not a lot of role models. You drive by a construction site and how often when kids are in the car with the parents, do they see women on a construction site doing something? Not very often, you know? So that's one of the things. The old saying, you know, if I don't see it, I can't do it, that type of thing. So I always tell tradeswomen to that we all, it's almost like to me, when you become a tradeswoman, you also take on the responsibility of becoming a mentor and trying to promote this to other women. So I always tell women that, you know, get your story out there. A lot of tradeswomen, just like we talk about being on the job and kind of, you know, being perfect, a lot of us also don't like to put ourselves out there. So a lot of women don't like to talk about what they do. So, I mean, things like this, like podcasts, what a great opportunity to let other people know that these careers are available. And all kinds of women are capable of doing this job. So we need to find those young girls and get it out there that, yes, this is a career option that everybody should be thinking about right from the beginning, you know. And it doesn't matter. Also, we talk about the young girls, and we also can reach the women who had been in careers, like I was in retail for years, and all of a sudden made a big career change. And it's been great for me. And I, you know, accomplished a lot in the 16 years, 14 years that I've been in. So again, we also can reach those other women that might be in jobs that is really not going to take them anywhere, and find those women and say, hey, you know, don't be afraid if you're 32, 33, 35 years old to make a career change and get in the trades and, you know, start becoming an apprentice. And then we all get those skills that we take with us for the rest of our life. So I think the challenge and one of the things that I think every tradeswoman should do is try to promote this industry as good. Because you and I both know amazing tradeswomen all across the country accomplishing amazing things in America and Canada. You know what I mean? So we have women business agents, we have women holding office, we have women at our international levels now doing recruiting. So I think that's really important to let people know that there's some place to go, even if you decide you get in the trades, and there's other places to go. You could start your own business, you can become an instructor, you can become a union officer. So there's so many avenues that people don't even think about.
Absolutely. Thank you for all of that information, Doreen. And so true. So true that, you know, we podcasts like this, and this is exactly why I decided to do this podcast, is we don't see enough of them. We don't see enough of them in their positions that they're in. And we don't like to be put on the forefront. We don't like to be, you know, put on the pedestal to share our story. Yes. We've been so used to being on these job sites where we don't try and hide, but we get highlighted enough that we just want to go to our workstation, do our job, you know, get along with our brothers and sisters on site, and just go home and be proud of ourselves. But we do need to put women on a pedestal and show and share the stories of their success, even if they don't take office or they don't become foreman or anything like that. They've done it. They're trailblazers. And that's exactly why I think this podcast is critical. In order to share across the country. And it's very easy to for anyone anywhere to link into a podcast. Right. I've seen women in Alberta because that's where I live, but I can now see women across the country in a podcast. And speaking of another thing that you brought up is reaching out to young women when they're in the early years. And I know you've done another podcast with your friend, somebody I really look up to, Judeline Cassidy. I really don't think she'll mind us doing a little plug for her here. So no, I know you did a podcast with her and I loved it. It was a really great podcast and she reaches out through Tools and Tiers. But if you don't mind, would you give a little plug?
Oh, for Judeline. So yeah, she's doing absolutely amazing things, how she started the Tools to Tiers. And it's reaching those young girls. It's reaching those elementary school girls. And she has day camps where she brings them together and she has little plumbing projects, carpentry projects, electrical projects for all them to do. And if you ever get a chance to watch some of those videos, those little girls are so excited. So excited. She said she takes she couldn't now because of COVID, but she takes them to a job site too. And they'll walk around a job site. She gets permission to take them on there. And she said, every time they see a woman tradeswoman, they start going, yeah, there's a woman. So, I mean, little girls are so amazing because they're not afraid to do anything. You know what I mean? No. And they want to do everything. They're not afraid to say, oh no, I don't want to do that. You know, they'll get right in and do just about anything. And they get mad if you don't let them try it. So it's the perfect age to reach them.
That is so wonderful what she's doing. And where is she located?
She's in wonderful. New York City. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I try and watch her as much as possible. I'm nowhere near her. I don't think I've ever met her in any of the conferences, but she is doing amazing things. So yes, and you are part of her podcast. So yes, anybody that's tuning into this podcast, please go check that one out as well. Anyways, I'd like to conclude our podcast. Thank you so much for your time, Doreen. I really appreciate it. I'm so honored to call you a friend, and you are a true UA goddess for real. So thank you for all the things that you're doing. People are watching. And you're making a change. You're changing things for women and underrepresented groups in the trades. And you're amazing. Oh, sorry, my web is telling me that we're having some trouble. Anyways, thank you very much for all that you do. I appreciate your time. Doreen Cannon from Local 55, UA, United Association of the Plumbing and Pipe Fitting Industry in the United States and Canada. Thank you so much, Doreen. Stick around when I stop recording. I want to chat with you a little bit more before you go. But thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I'll talk to you, Doreen, shortly. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and check us out at trailblazersinc.ca.